You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to Pop Culture Confidential, a part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. I'm Christina, so happy to have you with us. Right off the bat, I want to say that Sarah Polley's Women Talking is easily one of my most powerful movie experiences of 2022. And the opportunity to talk to actor Sheila McCarthy was amazing. To talk about this film, these themes, and the truths that really resonated so strongly with me long after I had seen the film. Sheila McCarthy is a veteran actor of stage and theater. She's worked with everyone from Eugene Levy to Liza Minnelli and worked with the director of Women Talking, Sarah Polley. Polley was a child actor and McCarthy played her mother in Road to Avonlea. Sheila McCarthy was also fabulous as Agnes in the recent Netflix hit The Umbrella Academy. Women Talking, written and directed by the great Sarah Polley, is based on the 2018 Miriam Taves novel. It's about a group of women from an isolated Mennonite colony who are grappling with the impact if they should stay or if they should leave after it's revealed that the men from their community have drugged and raped the women for years. They have 48 hours while the men are away. They gather in a hayloft to discuss whether they should stay and fight, leave, or do nothing. The film has incredible performances by my guest Sheila McCarthy, Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, Jesse Buckley, Judith Ives, Ben Whishaw, and Frances McDormand, who's also a producer on the film. And I also want to mention the incredible score by Hildur Gudnadsdottir.
Why does love, the absence of love, the end of love, the need for love, result in so much violence?
It was all waiting to happen before it happened. You could look back and follow the breadcrumbs along the path that led to violence. When we looked back, it had been everywhere.
It is a part of our faith to forgive.
We would be forced to leave the colonies if we do not forgive these men.
None of you will listen to reason.
We know that we've not imagined these attacks. We know that we are bruised and terrified.
Hope for the unknown is good. It is better than hatred of the familiar. And we could not endure any more violence.
We have been preyed upon like animals. Maybe we should respond like animals.
How would you feel if in your entire life it never mattered what you thought? When we've liberated ourselves, we will have to ask ourselves who we are.
Ms. Sheila McCarthy, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I wrote after seeing it that I caught myself holding my breath through certain scenes and feeling conversations I myself have had and other women have had, and I really thought it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. You know, I kind of equate it to we're singing a very long hymn for the 90 minutes. It's just with bumps and ups and downs, but that's what it seems like to me, you know.
Yes. Sarah Polley, a fellow Canadian national treasure like yourself, she contacted you about this project, and I understand you guys had a very long Zoom.
We did.
Can you talk a little bit about the vision that she presented to you?
Mm-hmm. We did. We I think we Zoomed for over an hour, and first she was very apologetic. She said, you know, because I have to make sure that I find the right people to be in the loft, the hayloft together. And, you know, you have to go through some hoops for the studios and blah, blah, blah. But it was just, it was such an incredible hour with her one-on-one, where actually a lot of groundwork got laid, and I wasn't even really cast yet, but we talked at great length right from the beginning of the script to the end of the script. And I knew then and there that her vision was really ironclad and strong, and she had worked on this for so long. And you know, I've worked with Sarah as an actor to actor, and I played her mom in a movie, and but as director to actor, we'd never done this. And I, as the Zoom went on, I realized how incredibly important this film was going to be, and how much I would love to be part of it. So, wow. It took 3 weeks to find out, and I was like, oh my goodness, to get pinned.
So the novel written by Miriam Taves and the film by Sarah Polley, it kind of stems from real events around 2005, a Mennonite community in Bolivia where women were drugged and raped and gaslit, essentially, written off as female hysteria. But Women Talking is about the conversation that happens afterwards, the difficult issues and what they should do. What is the conversation?
You know, what I just to go back one second, what I loved what Miriam Taves did was she took what was a horrific story and turned it into a novel of hope and firsts of these incredibly repressed women in this patriarchal society deciding to do something about their fate. So the conversation is post the rapes. And although there are flashbacks, you never see them. You don't need to see them. The conversation is the step forward. It's the beginning of these eight women and one man taking their faith and their, you know, their secret powers and beginning a conversation to finally discuss what happened to them and how to move forward or not move forward. And so that's the fable. That's the fairy tale of the piece. And I thought, what an incredible way to tell this harrowing story with a platform of positive thinking and conversation. So that's, you know, I think Miriam wrote that in the book, and then Sarah took the very best of that in her screenplay and then started to think about the visuals of what can also be laced into our conversations with each other when we only have 48 hours, and what is that ticking clock, and what is the landscape of the world that we live in, which is sort of timeless and you know, seeped in browns and taupes to make it seem otherworldly, and it could be anywhere. So
it could be anywhere, it's such a contemporary modern cultural context of discussions as well that I want to get into that resonate in any time for women. But before I get into that, who is Greta? How would you describe her?
Greta Loewen is one of the, I would say, elders of the the women who are chosen to decide the fate of the entire colony. And she has, you know, she has two daughters in the loft with her, but there would be many, many other children and grandchildren. You know, these women all had 12, 13 children and how many grand. So she is the matriarch of the Loewen family. And Greta is, I would say she's one of the quietest ones of the bunch. She bides her time. There's a gentle, wry humor to Greta that she uses as her secret weapon, I think, to further the conversation and to convince the others, I think, of what she quite firmly believes in right from the beginning, which is, you know, that after what has happened to her and to her children and to her grandchildren is something that cannot be lived with. And it's not a matter of leaving. It's that we cannot stay. And I think that as as a human being. Like I've always, that's sort of one of my doctrines. You know, if I'm in a situation, well, I can't really stay here. So I guess that means I have to leave. Don't necessarily want to. It's kind of scary, but that's the only thing to do. So, you know, she bides her time, you know, Greta, and listens very carefully and deeply to the conversations. And I think being older and slightly, you know, she has this more of a sage wisdom because of her years to sit and wait and to, you know, just convince.
I love how you use secret weapon, which I think is something women can do to not have conjecture and divide in a conversation, but you use mm-hmm. another form of psychology maybe to get to something deeper.
Well, with the faith, these women have great faith, and the basis of everything in their lives is done with that incredible, you know, safety net of their faith. And what comes with that is an incredible patience and tolerance and need for pacifism and a need to listen and to weigh everything very carefully. So although there's a ticking clock, we only have 48 hours, we will not be rushed. And I you know, when Sarah Polley was first writing the screenplay, I know she met with a group of Mennonite women, and they were the first people to see the film too, to give oh, wow. their, you know, to sign off on it. And the two things they wanted to see in the movie were laughter and human contact, touching. Mm. Because when women are alone, and we know this from being women too, it's a different conversation when it's just women in the room. You know, a man comes in, something changes a lot of the time. And so they were very adamant that Sarah create this hayloft of physical contact and listening and nurturing and laughter. And I think woven into the horror of what they're discussing is also that.
One of the most powerful, I just really cried is the scene that where they've been discussing. I mean, the discussions are you know, tense. Then a child comes in who's in distress. The mother takes her in her arms, and all the other women, irregardless of where they are in the conversation, just gather around her. And as you were saying, touch and this human, it's just this is what's important right now.
And you know what's incredible about what Sarah did with that particular moment, she does with the whole movie. She doesn't rush. And, you know, in this world that we're living in where people's attention spans are, you know, like a flea, it requires patience to watch this movie. But I think if you allow that in, it's a relief too. It gives you time to think when you're watching that movie and be moved by it. And, you know, that you don't see that very often.
And as we were saying before, that the sort of modern cultural context that you can...
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listen to this discussion. I mean, how many times haven't we heard, why didn't you just leave him? Why didn't you just leave that hotel room or whatever? Here there's issues of gender identity. I know that you had a lot of discussions while you were filming and spent many hours. Did you guys talk about that in relationship to now, what the discussions were?
Oh, definitely. We had, you know, a 2-week rehearsal period that was full of dissection and discussion. Once we sort of hit the hayloft, we were more concerned with the text, but still, you know, it was women talking off camera, well, trying to get us to shut up, to make called women talking. So there was a lot of discussion about that for sure. And one of the threads that I was concerned about was for Greta, you know, she has enabled her daughters over the years to be abused, to turn a blind eye, and to not stop what she knew was going on. And that it is an incredible epiphany halfway through the movie to apologize and yes. For probably the very first time to wake up and to say, this is wrong and we need to change this. And so, you know, you're right. I mean, how many women, and not just women, men too, they go back. They go back to what they know. And so that's what we're trying to change. And that's what the conversation is. Again, you can't stay, so you have to leave. So, you know, what are the obstacles in our way and how can we do this? Does this go away against every tenet of our faith? What about the men? Well, let's get the men to leave. Let's stay. I mean, it's, the discussion is so intricate. And but we did go to Roe versus Wade. We did talk about all those things that are so relevant now, because it's, you know, the hayloft is the world in a microcosm, isn't it? It's like three generations of people discussing, you know, death and life.
And Sarah Pauley really created, I understand, a safe environment for generosity to share. Mm. Many people shared their own stories, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That must have been an incredible experience.
Yes, and we had a grief counselor at our beck and call too, if we needed. And, you know, there were two young girls in the film who've never worked, you know, really, what a way to start a career and to be part of this. So we were very cognizant of their
teenage actors that
were with you. Yeah, teenage, you know, first, but actually they taught us, you know, they were so open and they taught us, you know, in many, many ways.
You talk about forgiveness, but what is forgiveness? Can forgiveness also be giving permission for someone yes. to do something horrible or keep doing it? And I really hadn't thought of that discussion in that way. So you're just mm-hmm. turning things in every different direction.
Yes, putting those two words together, forgiveness and permission. And that line, Sarah didn't get from the book. Someone said that to her in the course of writing. And that really resonated with her, because that's right. If you forgive, does that then give someone permission to continue this cycle of violence? And it's a complicated idea, you know, and silence, the silence is finally being broken. But it is only when the young ones force us to confront our silence and say, you can't do it. We caught them. We caught them. It's tangible. Change has to happen.
Sarah seems so open to that as a director. I understand that one of the most really powerful scenes that Greta has was an idea that came from you that she later used. This is a post her own rape scene. Mm-hmm. Will you talk about it?
Well, I've thought a lot about this. Yes, as I said, the scenes are all. The movie's not about the rapes. They're about the aftermath of the rape and what we're going to do. But each of us sort of have our own moment. And mine is my teeth falling out and some blood. And the day after we shot it, which I thought was also a metaphor too, like, you know, you have your teeth punched out of your mouth and you're fitted with teeth that don't fit, so you don't have your voice. Like, what an incredible metaphor that is that Miriam created. But anyway, the day after we shot that scene, I went up to Sarah and I said, you know, Greta should have made her bed. And she just looked to the sky and went, why didn't we do that? And I said, yeah, oh well. And 2.5 months later, it was just Sarah and I left to finish the movie. Everyone had gone home. They'd all wrapped. And she came into my trailer and she just said, do you want to make your bed? And she had the production manager, Peter, put together my bedroom again. And I said, I couldn't believe it. And I walked onto the set and Sarah said to the crew, we're going to redo Sheila's scene with her teeth at the edge of the bed because she needs to make her bed and it's her idea. And it's a really good one. And it's a really important one. You know, let's make our bed like it never happened. And the whole crew, like everybody was so on board and so got it. And that was the end of the movie. And, you know, for me, that was bigger and more important than any award or anything. That there are so few directors who collaborate like that and then give you credit for it. Like, it was just an an amazing moment in my life and in my career.
It is such an incredibly strong idea. For me, it was really how it can be for a woman that something horrible happens, but the next day you have to make your bed and take care of your kids and move on.
And move on, and life goes on. And these women are busy. You know, they are busy, busy women with the practical daily tasks of their days. And, you know, it's the earth, and it's their kitchens, and it's their children and their grandchildren, their sewing and their water. Like, they are, their lives are filled with busy. And so this is a moment of just reckoning, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And also so moving. There's so many great things, but just the fact that they're voting to me was just the moving vote.
You know, I'm so glad. Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because about a month ago, I was voting in Toronto to some municipal election in the city of Toronto. And I was in the booth casting my ballot. And I'm always very moved by that. Like, I always think this is like a big, I take it very seriously. And I thought back to the women, you know, they may be illiterate. They maybe can't read or write, and they've only had the Bible read to them, and they know their hymns, but that black X of casting a vote for the very first time in their lives is like the launching pad for the film. And it's so important and so moving to me.
And the fact that Sarah was saying in an interview recently that she, a small victory, but a big victory for us working women everywhere, that this was going to be a 10-hour day shoot. And she would go home and put her children to bed, and so would everyone else who needed to and wanted to, and things like that, which...
And she stuck to that. Like, she, I mean, we had some hellish mornings at 3 a.m. in the make, well, getting the mascara I had on the night before taken off. But you know, she stuck to that because it wasn't just like Cast and her three children. A lot of the crew really appreciated that, men and women going home to their children and having, and being able to put their children to sleep. Pretty great. Yeah.
Has this project got you thinking at all about sort of encouraging critical thinking and rebellion and things out of young women?
Mostly from the reaction of, you know, we were in Telluride and young women coming up and just hugging me and saying yes, and they're, you know, we're passing the baton to them. I mean, without question. And any movie that elicits the kind of conversation that this movie is eliciting is just an incredible side effect to having been part of this piece of art. So I love the conversations, and not just women, you know, I've families having discussions over dinner and arguing about the movie and really being puzzled by it. And, you know, well, where do they go? and you know, what happens to them? And unanswerable questions. It's, you know, but it doesn't always happen when you make a movie. It rarely happens.
We have a lot of discussions in our modern society today, but so much fighting and conjecture and not listening to either side. I mean, Sarah Polley was saying about a director she worked with as a young star that she had a bad experience with, that she would really like to talk to him and hope that he would hear her perspectives. And not a lot of people say that we have to sit down and talk.
Yes. And I think that the takeaway from this movie, I mean, last week when we were in Los Angeles and there were 20 women on stage, that's a powerful optic to see. I think it would be nice to not notice that someday.
Yes.
It would be super great for these young actresses in the movie to just, you know, that we don't notice it. But we're not there yet. And I think that this movie is an incredible stepping stone to achieving that. And, you know, the cat's out of the bag. We have to move forward. You know, and they're rolling out this movie with a lot of university gender studies groups and stuff. So we're hearing from a lot of people, the grassroots of this movement. And that's teaching me tons.
I can't miss asking you about August, Ben Whishaw. The man, I mean, he's also incredibly moving and a sort of a representation you can tell me, but of a good man, of an someone with education who's yes. who's been mm-hmm. taught that rebellion we were talking about, critical thinking.
Absolutely.
Who is he?
So August is the one man, and I elected to join us in the hayloft to document, to write a diary, to write down our conversation, to write down what the women are talking about, every single word. And he is the teacher in the colony who has also been blacklisted for going away to university and then coming back in. But he is the shining light of what a man could and should be. And, he, you know, his fragility is just, he's hard on his sleeve, trying to respect and honor everything that we say in the hayloft for those 2 days. And then he is the one who stays, you know, who will stay behind and try to influence the boys of the colony. And, you know, we give him a hard time sometimes, you know, because, you know, we've got some outspoken women in the colony say, you know what, your job is just to write things down. You don't have a voice. So Ben Wishaw was just an incredible, you know, he's an incredible actor, and it was a masterclass watching him work. But the part and in the book, August narrates the book, mm-hmm. which made total sense because he was the voice of the women. But then in the Ninth Hour, Sarah and Dee Dee Gardner and I think the editor decided that the voice of the film should be the young girl. And I think that was a stroke of genius to have her talk to an unborn child and say, this is what happened here and your life will be different.
Finally, I asked the group and I was allowed to say, I'm a member of the Critics' Choice Association and the Women's Committee there. And we mm-hmm. give out a Sophie seal, it's called. It's the seal of female empowerment in entertainment. That since September, it's been the Woman King. And she said, for example, and Women Talking is the next one that's going to get the seal. So first of all, congratulations.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's just great. Wow. In this world that we live in now, it's all very well and good to make these movies, but you want people to see them. And awards like that and, you know, whatever else comes our way, for me is like a platform to say, take the time to see this movie. I mean, and that sounds really simple, but, you know, go to the cinema and see this film and have a life-changing experience and talk about it. And so any time there's recognition like that, you know, art is to be communicated. Art is you know, there's secrets that need to be let out and otherwise what's it for, you know? And so that's, it's so great, and it provokes, you know, audiences seeing it and millions of people seeing it.
And for you as an artist, you were mentioning before how you hope that one day seeing 20 women on a stage behind a movie will not be anything strange. We won't even talk about it. But what is it for you to be an actor today, to be involved in a project with women both behind and in front and with these issues that it's talking about?
You know what? It's just, it's overwhelming. And it to be part of this movement, because it does feel like a movement as opposed to, you know, a piece of art, but it to be part of this wave, it feels natural and it feels like the way it should be. And it's what you hope for. And it feels right. That's how it feels.
That's great. Sheila, thank you so much for your
welcome.
Time. I'm going to get my two sons to see this movie. But in the meantime, they're going to be very proud of the fact that I talked to Agnes in the Umbrella Academy.
Oh,
so I could
so
probably
cute.
Get them to have some discussions on women
yeah,
talking as
that's
well.
That's great. Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you very much. Awesome.
Thank you so much to Sheila McCarthy. Do not miss Women Talking. It will be out in theaters soon. And thank you so much for joining us. You can subscribe to Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indie. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.